episode 645 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Valiant Sunday episode. It's also a 12 days of the Comic Source episode, so make sure to listen for the secret code word, retweet the tweet that announces this episode, as well as direct message us the secret code word for a chance to win Harbinger Volume 1 from Joshua Dice Art, a series that we very, very much love here at Comic Source, and we recommend highly. So today I'm going to be talking about Harbinger number 4. It's written by Joshua Dysart. The art is by Kari Evans with Matt Clark and Louis LaRosa. We've got colors by Ian Hannon and letters by Rob Steen. So in issue 3, we saw that Pete was officially recruited by the Harbinger Foundation. He was taken to Harada Global Conglomerates and started his training, and his first day of school didn't exactly go very well. In fact, I think he said something about, man, first days at school always suck. So this issue picks up with Faith, actually, Faith Haber, who we saw on the last page of the last issue we covered, issue 3, and she's come to be one of the most beloved, I'll say, characters in the Harbinger universe, and she made her debut in that issue 3, and we see that she's a character who very much loves superheroes. She loves the idea of superheroes. She has dreams and believes that there's something different and special about her. We learned last issue that a lot of psiots, their abilities are latent, and with the exception of Pete and Darpan, everyone has to have their powers activated in some way. Harada had his activated by the bomb being dropped in Hiroshima, but everyone else has to have them activated, and that's a very painful process, as we'll see, and a dangerous process, as we'll see in this issue. So, as I said, this issue picks up with Faith. She, I guess in today's parlance, would be considered a geek or a nerd. She loves video games, MMOs, Firefly, comic books, all that kind of stuff. She's a little overweight. She doesn't really have any aspirations of, you know, being a popular girl or anything. She mentions being bullied at school because of her weight. But we learn from a blog post that she has from a site that she runs. She has her own faithaber.com, Zephyr, it's called. And apparently she met a boy online and she bought a dress with money she was saving to buy a TARDIS playset. And she goes to the mall wearing this dress and she's going to meet this boy that she met online. Meanwhile, some of the other girls at the mall are there staring at her, making disparaging remarks. Faith's dress is red, and they're calling her a fire truck, basically. And meanwhile, a boy walks by. It's Edward from the Harbinger Foundation. And the girls are very surprised when Edward walks over and gives flowers to Faith. The fact that Edward, this guy that they very much admire and think is very cute, is there to see it, what in their minds is the fat girl. Meanwhile, back at the foundation, Pete is or has been going through training under the watch of Hidden Moon, the headmaster whose power is to turn other people's powers off. What they've learned is Pete has a mind whip, dubbed the Sting by fellow students. He has thought transference, limited telepathy, psychokinesis, and apparently he can levitate, although he has yet to demonstrate that ability at the Harbinger Foundation, but recovered memories suggest that he should be able to do that. However, he has a distinct lack of control with his powers. They tend to get out of hand when he uses them, and so they have suspended sparring with other students and the team building activities until they think Pete has better control. They also mention that Pete is extremely intelligent as shown by any verbal test that he takes. However, he shows a distinct lack of interest in any academic studies as far as reading, taking tests, things of that nature. So the scene shifts to Pete in his room, and he sees who he thinks is Joe in the bathroom. He walks over there. Joe's not there. And as he looks in the mirror, he sees Chris behind him. But of course, when he turns around, no one's there. And again, he thinks about how sorry he is for putting Joe in danger and for what he did to Chris. The scene then shifts to Harada's office, where we see that this report, the status report on Pete, is being given by Ingrid and Hidden Moon. And Harada wants to hear their oral arguments, what should be done with Pete. And Hidden Moon says he remains emotionally volatile and very dangerous, and his rebellious streak borders on the pathological. It's that he can't help himself but to defy authority. But Ingrid's a little more optimistic. She says that Hidden Moon's judgment is too harsh. They're basically trying to institutionalize a teenager who's grown up in institutions. He obviously he's going to rebel against that. And she says his control is improving. You know, he's off the drugs. He's able to filter out on his own the thought cloud, which we saw was the reason he was self-medicating in the first issue, because the other people's thoughts were constantly encroaching on his own and he just couldn't take the noise. So Hidden Moon says, you know, his control is increasing, and that's actually my greatest concern, that he's going to become too powerful. It would be more prudent just to kill him instead of train him. So Ingrid says there's obviously problems, and I don't know that tonight's plan is the best plan. I don't know if we should do that. He might react more violently. But whatever this plan is, Harada says the plan stands, because he feels that he can't make a decision about Pete's future until he knows if Pete's able to perform what Harada calls the most powerful act Sayat can perform. And as for killing him, Harada says in response to Hidden Moon, the Bleeding Monk sees great things for Peter, so that's enough for him to keep on the course of training him. But when Harada meets with the Bleeding Monk calls him on that. He says, you lie in my name. Hubris has you in his clutches. Harada's response to that is, it's not hubris, it's compassion. This boy's broken and lost, and I just want to help him. And Bleeding Mug doesn't buy that for a second. He's all, well, then you lie to yourself, because that's not why you're doing it. Harada then meets with Livewire, asks if the girl Edward brought in is ready. And again, that's obviously Faith, as we saw Edward meet with her at the mall. And so Livewire summons Pete. And when Pete meets with Harada, he says, good to see you. You wear your uniform well. And Pete's like, man, it's been a month. You just dumped me here. I haven't seen you. And Harada says, these are my most trusted allies, my most trusted comrades. They care about you. Pete's not buying it. He's like, they're just scared of me. It's not the same thing. So Harada says, let's go for a walk. It's time for you to get a glimpse behind the curtain. This is when he confides in Pete. He says, you know, I was born in Hiroshima and the bomb was dropped and that's how my powers are activated. And, you know, I wasn't so different from you. I lived in a refugee camp. And then when the war was over, I was abandoned. I lived in a tent by the river, and I was homeless and unloved, and I never understood what to do with my powers. And one day I decided, this is what I was meant to do with my powers. This is my path to change the world, to activate other Psyots. So he takes Pete to their recruitment center, where he sees Rachel again, the woman who recruited him into the Harbinger Foundation that fateful night. They explain to Pete at any one time, they're tracking over 500 latent Psyots around the world, and they watch them sometimes for up to a year to decide if they should consider recruiting them. And it's very rare that they actually approach and offer activation, because the students have to fit very strict parameters. And they don't tell Pete what those parameters are, but in a way, it's got to be, they've got to believe that they can convince these latent Psyots to join their organization, right? There has to be some signs that they can be manipulated in a way. It's almost evil. And Pete says, activation, like turning on their powers. How does that work? Can I see it? And Harada takes Pete and shows him a video. He does warn him, hey, you don't have to watch this because the process is dangerous and it's pretty graphic. And I want you to be sure that you want to see this because, and I want you to see the process in its most honest light. And again, this is Harada completely manipulating. Pete's like, what do you mean? And as they watch the video, the subject starts screaming in pain. And Harada says, at its best, the activation is extremely painful. And at its worst, and as they're watching, this guy's head literally explodes. And Pete's just horrified. He's like, whoa, did that dude just die? And Harada says, 1 in 4 do. It's the bane of my life. The process is, of course, voluntary, and some choose not to try, and that's fine. We mind wipe them. We give them back their lives. But most are desperate to be activated, and they choose to go through the process. And Pete says, why not just leave them alone? Let them live their lives. What's the point? And again, Harada says, the point is what I was born to do, right? Look at the world. We wage wars. We drop bombs. People are starving. People are dying. And we need activated psyops and strong leadership of humanity to survive itself, much less any exterior threat that's coming. And Pete's not convinced. He's like, man, you sound like a cult leader, right? If you want followers, be Gandhi, be like Jesus, not some super capitalist with a God complex handpicking people you think deserve power and then torturing them. Because that's the thing. If Harada really was doing this because he believed that the world needs these psyops activated, then why does he go through such an arduous process to decide who to recruit and who not to? Because obviously he's only recruiting people he believes will join his cause, will follow him, as opposed to if anybody has powers, just try to activate them. If that's really what you believe, if all psyops deserve to be activated and the human race needs psyops activated. But no, he's following his own plan. And it's really starting to show Harada's true colors here. So again, Harada, ever the manipulator, says, well, Pete, what if we could put a stop to the activation process? Ingrid says, you might be able to activate people with just your mind. And Pete's really not on board with that idea. He says, what? No. Because again, we saw last issue, Pete, when he was a very young child, sensed that his father had latent abilities and attempted to activate his father and basically lobotomized him. And Harada mentions that. He's like, look, I know this is hard. It's a tough choice. I know what happened with your father, but that you were a child and you can't blame yourself. But you're beyond that. You've learned control now. You're starting to learn to use your powers. And there's no living psyop in memory that's been able to activate others. It's such a gift. And I have a latent girl here, and she's willing to do anything to have her powers activated. So help me help her. Pete says, absolutely not. Send her home, mind wipe her, do whatever it is you do. Harada says, well, at this point, it's her choice and she'll do anything to be activated. So it's either you or the machine. So at least meet with her and make a decision. Her name is Faith. And so Pete does go and meet with Faith, and he actually tells her, you should go home right now. And she's like, what are you talking about? She's so excited. She's in the secret headquarters and people have powers. She's seen them and great, cool uniforms. It's everything she's ever dreamed about. It's validation for the things that Faith loves, right? She'll do anything to be a part of it. She'll do anything to feel like she belongs to something bigger than herself. She spent her whole life being bullied and feeling alone and being isolated. So the fact that she can be something more, she can have value and self-worth in that. I mean, there's really no change in her mind. She doesn't really understand how dangerous it really is, though. You know, would she be willing to risk her life? So as Pete is standing there, Harada tells him again, in his mind this time, it's you or the machine. So Pete says, okay, lay down. Let me at least take a look. And he looks in her brain and he starts activating things. Faith gets a vision in her mind of being up in the sky, but then all of a sudden it seems to go sideways. Her nose starts to bleed, and Pete starts turning off his powers as Faith is saying, it hurts, And Pete says, I'm sorry, I had to stop. It was going to go bad. Pete's upset that Hidden Moon is there. He asks what he's doing there. And Ingrid says, well, he's here to shut you down. He says, no, I can do it on my own. I'm okay. I'm fine. But go to her, Ingrid. Go to Faith. And Pete turns to Harada and says, please don't make me help any more people, please. And Harada says, forgive me, Pete, but, you know, I had to try. So back in his room, Pete has a visit from Joe. And he's like, "What? You know, what's going on here? I know you can't be real. You're like a rogue memory or a guilt projection or just some dumbass crap." And this projection of Joe saying, yeah, it's just that, you know, I think there might be something wrong. I think Joe's been trying to reach out to you. And I think they're keeping it from you. They're blocking your powers. I mean, aren't you done with this place? This place is lame. And Pete says, you know what? Yeah, I am. And can you take me to Joe, the real Joe? And this projection says, I'm pretty sure that's the whole reason why I'm here, amigo. Let's get out of here. So as Pete walks the hallways looking for a way out, he runs into Livewire. And Livewire says, Harada asked me to check on you. You've had a traumatic day. It's probably wise to stay in your room. And Pete says, I'm going for a walk, unless you think you can stop me. And Livewire says, you know what? I'm going to shut off the building's mechanical defenses for the next 5 minutes. Because I'm not saying you're a prisoner here, but I'm saying it'll be a lot easier for you to leave if you leave in the next 5 minutes. And Pete's like, well, how are you going to do that? She says, let's just say I have a special relationship with machines. No one will be listening or watching for 5 minutes. And I can make sure that nobody even realizes that those 5 minutes are missing. And Pete's like, why are you doing this? You work for Harada. And Amanda says, well, because I think you're an idiot and you make the worst of every opportunity you're given. And I think we'll be better off with you gone. And you now have 4 minutes and 56 seconds. And meanwhile, Harada's watching a news report about the medbots that he's deployed and given out to humanitarian medical organizations around the world. He finds out that he's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, as these medbots have been helping out in war-torn areas. And while he's watching this report, he gets a report from Hidden Moon that Pete has disappeared. And he's wondering if they want to send a unit of egg breakers to hunt him down. But Harada says, no, I've got one more hand to play. Send for Edward. Meanwhile, outside, this projection of Joe has led Pete to an abandoned tenement. And when Pete goes in, he finds Joe with a needle in his arm, unconscious, what looks to be unconscious, vomit all over his face. And he immediately panics. He runs over, he grabs Joe, tells him, wake up, I can fix this. I'm coming in, I can save you, just hold on. And when he goes inside Pete's mind, he finds nothing there. Nothing, just a necrotic brain, gray dead meat. And he's very distraught, saying, Joe, please forgive me, I didn't know. And he sort of blacks out. Next thing we know, Ingrid is there. And she's telling Pete that they're glad that they found him. And Pete doesn't really understand how they were able to find him. And Ingrid says, well, you and Harada are one at this point. And Pete's like, well, how long have I been here? Ingrid says, I'm not sure, hours maybe? And Pete wants to know why they didn't take care of Joe, right? They promised that they would. And Ingrid says, we tried, but his addiction was out of control. We did everything we could. And Pete doesn't understand. He's like, you have so much power. You could have stopped this. And Ingrid tries to turn it back on Pete himself and says, well, Rachel told us that we promised not to go inside his mind. You said that's what you wanted. You had power. You have power, Pete. You couldn't stop it. And Pete says, you're wrong. I could have. And Ingrid says, well, it's too late now. He's gone. We'll clean him up. We'll give him a proper burial, however you want it done. But come back to the foundation where your family will take care of you. But Pete's suspicious. He says, you know, Joe hated needles. And I can't see him being using a needle, right? I can see him ODing on pills, but not shooting up. It doesn't make any sense. And Ingrid is trying to placate him, saying things like this never make sense. Meanwhile, Pete is reaching out with his mind to the other people, the other addicts or junkies or homeless people, whoever they are in this tenement. reaching out probably to try to see if they have any memory of Joe. They saw what happened. And when he reaches out, he realizes all these people are blank. And he tells Ingrid, there's something wrong. Everyone's minds are blank. They're completely wiped. Ingrid says, Pete, let's go. It's not safe here. And then Pete realizes, wait, Syots were here. And if Syots were here, then that means... And he uses his powers to fling Ingrid away. He's extremely upset. Harada's plan has backfired. And Pete wants to know why the Harada Foundation killed Joe. Harada completely underestimated Pete in this situation. He thought, well, if we show Pete that we have compassion, if we show Pete that his biggest link to the outside world, Joe, is no longer there, it'll hopefully turn Pete back toward us. We can show Pete, hey, look at what terrible things are in the world, addiction and drugs and everything. You need to help us activate these Syots. You need to quote-unquote join the cause. But again, I think Harada just underestimated Pete. He underestimated the fact that he would pick up on the subtle clues, you know, like Joe would never use a needle. All the other junkies in the tenement are mind wiped. It you know, Pete immediately puts it together. Who else but Syots could wipe the minds of these other people? So it's an interesting journey that Pete takes in this issue. He's antisocial, he's rebellious, he doesn't get along with his fellow students, he resists Harada's attempts to make him part of the team. He just doesn't work well with others. And so it's almost surprising that Harada would make this mistake, right? I mean, Pete's looking for any excuse not to work with others, looking for any excuse to turn away from Harada. And I don't know that he's necessarily conscious of it, but he's looking for any excuse to turn away from the Harbinger Foundation. He doesn't feel that he belongs to a group like that. He clearly has empathy for these Syots. He's upset when he sees the video of the activation and seeing people die for that. When he meets Faith, he, despite his protestations, he immediately tries to help her become activated because he thinks, well, maybe I can do it without her dying, and the machine, you know, has a 75% chance to kill her. So why would he not try to help? So clearly there's compassion there, there's empathy there. But at the end of the day, you almost have to think that Pete is, even at this point, is not even sure who he is. He's lived with these powers that have been out of his control all his life, and now he's learning control. But he's got to grow up, right? He's got to discover who he is. Who am I when I have these powers and abilities that I'm able to control, as opposed to having lived his whole life just treating the symptoms? You don't really have time to really figure out who you are if you're always on the run and you're always trying to treat the symptoms rather than the cause. The Harbinger Foundation, for all its machinations and manipulations of global markets and the world and activating Syots and having them join their foundation like a cult, you've got to give it credit where credit is due as far as taking one of the most powerful Syots on the planet, Pete Stanchek, and giving him some positive momentum in his life to be able to control his powers. But again, Harada underestimates. He overestimates himself. He overestimates his ability to bring Pete over to his side. He's ham-fisting it, you know, especially in this situation with Joe, and it completely backfires. There's no way that Pete's ever going to join the Foundation. There's no way he's ever going to see Harada as anything but an enemy now, because Harada killed the only friend that Pete ever had, the only real friend that Pete ever had, the only one that stood by him regardless of his powers, regardless of any fear of what Pete could do. Pete never had to manipulate Joe in the way that he manipulated Chris into caring for him. Joe was the one person that always stood by him, always had his back, even Pete's parents, abandoned him. His mother was the one that took him to the mental institution. So the one good person in Pete's mind that was in his life was taken from him by Harada. There's no going back from that. And it's a very surprising mistake for Harada to make, because he is so intelligent. And you would think at some level, Harada would realize that the risk is too great. Any chance for Pete to find out and you've lost him forever. And that's exactly what happens here. So it's clearly a mistake of hubris. We saw in this issue that the Bleeding Monk uses that very term, right? It's ego. It's Harada's belief that he can do no wrong. And despite the fact that the Bleeding Monk continually sees, despite what Harada does to try to change it, he continually sees Pete as the destroyer, right? Pete Stanchek's going to destroy the world. And Harada's belief that he can change the outcome of that and turn this incredible power that Pete wields to the side of the Harbinger Foundation. Again, you wonder why. So why would Harada take the risk? He believes in himself wholeheartedly. He believes in himself without any doubt or reservation. And despite the fact that he's brought Pete under his roof and he's training him, the vision doesn't change. The Bleeding Monk still sees him as the destroyer. And Harada even goes so far as to lie to his other comrades, his underlings, Hidden Moon and Ingrid and Livewire, and tell them, hey, the Bleeding Monk sees Pete as essential to our plans. He's going to do great things. And the Bleeding Monk calls him on that, said, no, you're lying in my name. Like, how dare you? It's all hubris. You believe you can change the future, and the future cannot be changed. I've never seen Pete be anything but the destroyer that I originally saw him to be. And you've got to think that in a way, it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy in trying to change that future. In Harada's belief that he could change that future, he perhaps has pushed Pete down that path after all. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next issue now that Pete's sort of unleashed. Clearly doesn't have full control over his powers. The training, he probably should have gone through a lot more training, but that's all out the window now that he believes that the Harbinger Foundation and Toya Harada have killed Joe. And it's going to hit the fan next issue for sure. So we'll be covering that on an upcoming episode of Valiant Sunday. So as I mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to be giving away Harbinger Volume 1 for this 12 Days of the Comic Source episode, the code word STING, which in the first go-round of Valiant was Pete Stanchek's code name. And we saw that term used here as they were training Pete. They mentioned the mind whip that he has, that he uses on other people during the sparring sessions, which the other students have nicknamed the Sting. So that's the code word we'll go for, Sting. So be sure to retweet the tweet that announces this episode and DM us the code word Sting for a chance to win that Volume 1 of Harbinger. So I think that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks for joining us as always. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.